Okay. So next is Pat. Do you want to come up and give talk about your upper ontology?
Well, I can talk from here. Okay. First slide. I'm going to describe it as some work that's in progress. It's just really starting, based on a lot of other work that's never got finished. What I want to describe is a project in which I'm in the process of building an ontology. I call it a foundation ontology. These things have been called upper ontologies. I don't like that particular metaphor. Called the Cosmo. This was started as a project within the Cosmo, which is a common semantic model working group of the ontology taxonomy coordinating working group. But repurposing the Cosmo to serve as what I call conceptual defining vocabulary. And the notion is this, that if you have a base ontology which has all the fundamental representations of all the fundamental concepts that are necessary and sufficient to define any specialized concept, and any two projects or multiple projects that use this as the core set of concepts with which they define their specialized concepts. At any time these two projects want to share information, they merely have to share their definitions. And because they're based on the same fundamental ontology, necessarily those two projects will then be able to arrive at the same logical conclusions from the same data. And I think this is the highest level of interoperability one can aim for. The notion of a conceptual defining vocabulary is based on proven technology and language. There are dictionaries. So you can go to the next slide. I think. Dictionaries which actually use controlled defining vocabulary for their definitions. The first, I think, was a Longman's dictionary. They use 2,000 base words. With those 2,000 words, they can define 100,000 words in their dictionary. I attempted to check to see if this worked reasonably well. I did some experiments myself. I took 500 words that were not in the base defining vocabulary, and I tried to define them with words from the base defining vocabulary, and without fudging, without trying to strain meanings of words. And I concluded that you could do it. I only had to add actually two new words to the base vocabulary. Those were specifically the words dimension and the word participant. For some reason, they weren't in the base defining vocabulary, and these are really fundamental concepts that you needed to express certain things, participant in an event or an action. Because words are labels for concepts, my hypothesis is that the fact that you can take these words and with them a limited number of words define all the terms in the dictionary you want to define, that analogously one should be able to define any concept you want to define using base concepts in a ontology that is intended and designed to serve as a conceptual defining vocabulary. Next slide. Just to elaborate on what I mean by defining with respect to base ontology, I wanted to define this is a linguistic defining vocabulary. I want to define the concept of an atomic nucleus. The definition says it's a central part of an atom containing all the atom's mass and its protons and neutrons. Well, protons and neutrons are marked as not being in the base defining vocabulary. But it turns out that I could define proton with respect to the base defining vocabulary, and I could define neutron with respect to the base defining vocabulary. So that ultimately I can define atomic nucleus transitively or recursively, if you wish, with respect to the base defining vocabulary. Just say, any given word you want to put in, you may find that there are certain words missing from the base defining vocabulary, and you have to define those. But ultimately, going down without overlap, it does prove possible to ultimately define any word you want with respect to the base defining vocabulary. Next slide. So what will this conceptual defining vocabulary, not the linguistic, but the conceptual defining, be? How big will it be? Well, the Longman's 2,000 words actually represent more than 2,000 concepts. Some of the words are used in more than one sense, so you're guessing. My guess right now is going to be in the order of 4,000, 6,000, and my intention is to do the experiments to try to determine just how big a foundation ontology you really need to serve as the conceptual defining vocabulary. So this is really an experiment. I'm very experimentally inclined. I like to answer questions by doing experiments. And people have said, well, is there such a thing as a fundamental defining vocabulary? I intend to find out. Okay, next slide. how. Now, this gets to the question of methodology. Basically, the methodology was ad hoc. This is something which is there was not any previously existing methodologies for doing this sort of thing that I was aware of. And so what I took was a methodology of merging existing ontologies and supplementing them where needed. And, of course, the first question that comes up is, well, why don't you just use existing ontologies per se? Why build yet another upper ontology? And the answer is, well, I am using the existing ontology. It's just that they don't all have everything I want in it, and so I'm picking and choosing those things I think are needed from all the upper ontologies I can get my hands on and adding to it those things that aren't in there. The other principle is that this is basically promiscuous. I'll put in anything that looks like it could be useful. And anybody else is welcome to put in anything they think is useful, too, to suggest the things in the course of this. This will be public. It'll be on the web shortly. The notion is that the base ontology should be able to accommodate anything anybody wants in it that they feel is necessary for creating their definitions. And we'll find place for it. To find the proper relationships of any new terms that are required in a base ontology with respect to those that are already in there. And if it turns out that somebody wants to put in something that's logically inconsistent with the base ontology, this could present a problem. We'll find some way around it, but I think it's not going to happen, really. I haven't seen any necessary examples. There are different ways of doing things, but they're translatable into each other, not really logically inconsistent. It's just that there's a preferred way and there's another preferred way. If people insist, you can have two ways in there and just have translations between them. We will see as time goes by whether there actually any logical incompatibility arises. Next slide. And just to give an example of how this is going, after I hit 2,500 classes, I'm just doing a taxonomy at this point, and it's an owl. We start off with around 2,500 classes, and now I'm taking... in the Sumo and the Open Psych, there were about somewhat over 500 terms that were identical in Shu. And I'm checking these to see are they actually identical concepts. In most cases, they are. Sometimes they're not. And as I'm adding those in, on the bottom, I'm adding classes in. And on the left-hand side, what I'm showing you is the number of total classes I had to add. In order to put one class into the ontology, I had to add maybe two or three. And you'll notice from the slope of the slide that it only moderates a little bit. In the first half, it's 295. The second half, it's 224. There is no asymptote evident at this point. And perhaps there shouldn't be because we're working with base ontologies. But the idea is that at some point, as we add more and more terms to your ontology, we should asymptote. You shouldn't need to add any additional terms other than the term you're adding. That should asymptote out to a level zero. Okay, next slide. Where are we now? We're around 3,000 classes, 300 relations. We're going to keep going until we get all of the Longman's linguistic defining vocabulary in there. Next slide. Okay, here we get to the issues that we're concerned about here. What are the design considerations? Well, as I say, it has to include anything anybody wants in it. Otherwise, it won't serve. So it has two design purposes. One is as a defining vocabulary, it serves as an integration ontology. In fact, that's what Sumo was intended to serve as. That's what Psych was intended to serve as. As I say, this is yet another upper ontology, but with a somewhat different methodology and a different purpose and a very firm commitment to sticking close to linguistic usage so that we can have good translations, good linguistic interfaces to the ontology. And creating a natural language interface is going to be difficult. I estimate at a minimum 20 person years. So this is for the future. I have to first create the base ontology to demonstrate that it's worth trying. Next slide. So with these base design considerations in mind, then therefore how do I differ from Psych? Well, several examples. In Psych, okay? Sorry. Well, I'm doing that now. These are the differences. Okay. How do the design considerations create the intention to create something different? Well, because in Psych, when they don't say there's a color red, what they say is that there are red things. And we want to be sure that in the ontology there's actually an attribute called the color red. So you have to structure it somewhat different. Next slide. And this is how it looks in Psyche. There's a difference. Whereas at the bottom in Cosmo, when you want to say red things, a red substance is red, you put it in one line. Every red substance has color red. Okay, next slide. Psyche also has differences in the way they represent substances. Won't go into that. Next slide. Sumo has differences in the way they represent role-based relations. They have differences in the way they represent texts. So there are differences which make it, I think, in order to stick close to the linguistic alignment, which is one of the base purposes of designing this particular ontology, you do want some things that are different from the other upper ontologies. Okay, next slide. And in general, we want to create an ontology to make it easier to represent things in ontology, to make it easier to query the ontology, to make it easier to use. We want to keep it as close as possible to language, to English, create a good English language interface. Sorry, Europeans, for other languages, they only know English. I'm doing some experiments to try to demonstrate this is actually a feasible technique. Is there anything else in here, Peter? Is there another slide? Is that it? Okay, now, on the categories that, do you have any time left, Tom? Okay, with respect to the categories, with respect to this... Well, do you want me to go with the seven dimensions? With respect to structure, the ontology is going to be an OWL and FOL. OpenPsych and Sumo both have OWL and first-order logic, FOL, versions. And we do need, in order to be expressive enough, you do need the axioms, so you do need ultimately rules of some form, first-order logic. So it's in the same category as Sumo and OpenPsych in that respect. Expressivity, similar. Same expressivity as those two. Granularity, I don't understand. I'm not sure what that means. So
could you talk over?
What am I supposed to write?
Yes. Start from column B.
What do you want me to do?
Is it called an ontology?
I think so.
Five.
Well, I'd say five. I don't know what else you'd call it. I'm calling it an ontology.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Structure. What are the dimensions of structure? It's logic based, I guess. I'm not sure how.
Structure would be. Help me out with this, you guys. It would be that. Turn that off for a second, please. There we go. Forgot. Is the structure of it? Is most of the definitions, or a lot of them, formal, and do they have formal semantics, or is it mostly open texture predicates? And just like Longman has that primitive bit where they're all open, they're just primitives, they're atoms, and then the rest of it is formal because it's composed of the primitive vocabulary.
Okay, the ontology has, of course, it has the descriptions, the English language descriptions, and I try to be reasonably formal in the descriptions, but the essence of the ontology, what the computer will reason with, is formal in the same sense. It's definitely formal in the same sense that OWL is formal. And it's formal in the same sense that KIF language is formal, that it has the capability for first-order logic. That's the intended expressivity. So it's formal. Formal, rules-based. I would emphasize rules-based because that's you can be formal without having axioms. And I think that the expressivity is pretty much the same thing.
Well, I would actually put axioms rather than rules then.
I use rules when I'm talking to people who don't know what axioms are, but I mean the same thing by them, basically. Well, here's the thing. The OWL version will have a swirl-like rules associated with them. There may or may not be a need for an FOL version that uses something beyond swirl-like rules, and those you'd probably call axioms. But I'm thinking in terms of swirl-like, they call them rules as being axioms in the ontology. What's your pleasure as for the terminology?
There's clear mathematical of expressive power. Thank you. I mean, who's the formal logician?
Well, in either case, Seppo will.
I'm a formal logician.
Good.
Any broken logics? The confusion I have is the use of those terms. In mathematical logic, you have nice formulas. You have your variables and your logical constructs,
right,
and go to town.
Right.
What you usually call an axiom is just a closed formula.
Yes.
Have a nice day. That's it. You don't necessarily have to add additional predicates or other relations or other logical constructors, if you like, into the formal language to develop new axioms. So when
yes.
I spoke with this about certain people, never mind, I won't go into that. But that's a very large confusion that realms or is out there, especially people in the semantic web. You know, rules, schmools, they are formal statements that you want to talk about, usually. In
yeah.
which case,
well, no, those are. It's, I think this is where you get into questions of expressiveness. So the intent is that with rules languages, they're a restricted syntax, and so it's not a general form of a full first order logic formula. And then you get OWL, which has less expressiveness than say a rules language. So you know, I think this particular discussion is more along the lines of the expressiveness as opposed to the structure.
Right. And the intention is, although at present I only have an OWL version, the intention is that there will be a version with the full expressiveness of first-order logic and axioms which have variables in them, and everything you can put into an axiom will be in there.
Well, no, but that's just this distinction between expressiveness. So if you want to make this distinction with rules and axioms, you should be talking about expressiveness
right.
as opposed to structure.
Yeah, and if I can just interpose, I think the notion of rules, like a swirl, for example, those are really more like, they come from horn rules from logic programming, which is really more like a generalized modus ponens that's just an instantiated modus ponens, right?
Yep. Are we going to take each one of these categories and do it kind of on the fly, or are we going to sort of try to get the 1 through 5s, although maybe not each one, figured out beforehand, because we just went round and round on this one block,
yeah.
And I'm sort of wondering, as we come to each one, do we come up with some kind of an idea beforehand about what we mean from expressivity from 1 to 5 or something else like that? Excuse me.
I was hoping we could we went down depth first on this one for a second. This is a good example of something the community might be able to do. Maybe we don't do it exhaustively today, but in terms of saying, look, there are important thresholds in expressivity here, and here are 3 or 4 of them, and they relate to functionality in the following way. And the examples can show us that. So we can close the conversation for this particular ontology because you don't seem to care, and you don't even know yet whether the content requires it. But some other ones do care and do, like, for instance, some of them are essentially only subsumption or something like that. And in those cases, that's a clear example.
Well, there is one category of intended use, and there's 2 intended uses. It's ontology integration and natural language understanding. So that's one category, intended use. Ontology integration, natural language, or database integration also work for that, and natural language understanding. And for strictness, it's not strict at all. Anything goes.
I'm sorry, but I don't understand where we're making these judgment calls. Where's the definition of expressivity and structure? Because for me, they are entirely circular and they are totally confounded. So I sympathize with Pat trying to decide whether something fits here or here and how to characterize it, because I don't think they're cleanly defined.
Well, actually, the word expressiveness has some very technical definitions within mathematical logic, so it's really applying some of those. The question, though, of what is structure, I think, that's a valid point, is that we really do need to articulate what do we mean by structure and what are the different possible values, if you will, along that structure dimension. I agree. But, I mean, that's the point of this session, mm-hmm. is to just provide these kinds of phenomenological descriptions, which we can then try to say, well, if people believe that structure is a dimension, and then, they're describing their ontology, we will be able to extract from that.
Please read the paragraph, okay, those 2 paragraphs, because they mm-hmm. do try real hard to clear. There's one giant objective difference between them, and that is that expressivity is purely a function of the encoding language, and level of structure or formality is a property of the content. The substance of it. Now, you can say they're highly correlated. That doesn't mean they're the same factor. Okay? They're correlated. And so one is a necessary condition for the other in certain cases.
So they're not orthogonal.
They are orthogonal. The point is they can be – orthogonal doesn't mean not correlated.
Actually, it means that they do not overlap, very, very simply.
Sorry, that's not true. You're going to pull that out. That's not true. The orthogonal means mathematically they're different axes, right? And if they and you can have a perfect correlation between two axes.
But we
but
don't
not
have.
If it's intrinsic.
But we do not have.
If it's the property of the data.
But we do not have.
It's not.
We do not have distinct axes.
If that's the question, if that is the case, that there are two definitions of what we mean by orthogonal, I think we've got to go back
enough.
A step a little bit when
we're
talking about trying to
more?
Identify
Tom?
Orthogonal dimensions.
Hold on, Tom. If those two, structure and expressiveness, are highly correlated, regardless of whether they're orthogonal, not orthogonal, what? But if they're highly correlated, effectively, do we need to distinguish them?
Well, no. So, for example, you take a particular, let's say, the subsumption relation, okay, or if I can abuse and people attack me, say, you know, taxonomies are representing some kind of is a relation. Now, that is a property of that particular ontology. Now, that can be expressed in many different languages, and there may be a minimal expressiveness in a language that's required to even capture that is a relation. That's the nature of the correlation, and that's the only nature of the correlation. Certain kinds of structure will have a minimal expressiveness requirement on the language. That does not tell you that you must be using that language, and it doesn't say if you're using that language, you must necessarily use that structure, right? It just there's this minimal threshold. That's the degree of correlation. That's all there is.
Why don't we set up, I mean, what we want in expressivity, expressiveness? I mean, 1 through 5 or? Could we go back? We didn't even do D and E.
Yes. Automated reasoning is absolutely required for both applications.
Can we go back to D?
Well, it's the same. It does support automated reasoning, right? Expressiveness. What are you going to say?
Well, maximum FOL, but there will be a version in OWL. Maybe this is an ambiguity we can clear up. Let us say that if you have several versions, the expressiveness should be the expressiveness of the most expressive version, I would think.
What do you think?
I think, yeah, it should probably be maybe minimal expressivity.
Yeah. But you were saying OWL plus swirl, though, right?
Yeah, so OWL and swirl, yeah.
So that's good because it's a defining characteristic of ontologies, and we can talk about it. Well, that's good to them in case, like taxonomies and whatnot, right?
Well, I said it's not strict. I don't know what the terms you're using there. I call it promiscuous. So whatever.
Well, prescriptive and descriptive, I think. So I think you mean descriptive, right? Which is kind of promiscuous.
Yeah, I think that's the formal term. Yeah, okay. no, not based on any previously existing methodology.